This is episode 391 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, July the 2nd, 2012.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
This is an exciting day in the history of the NBN.
Copyright.gov is down. FBI.gov is next to go.
The world is in trouble. There is no Wikipedia.
Who here has an iPhone? Who here has a BlackBerry? Who here uses Gmail? Well, you're all screwed.
So we'll be monitoring this very closely. No one will pay for these rights if they can't find a way to make money off them.
Copyright is such a big issue. Legislation as 2006 is already outdated by the new technologies.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. On the show today, an early version of the World Wide Web rolled out in France in 1982 is to close after 30 years of service. It was considered one of the world's most successful pre-World Wide Web online services. Apple manages to get the Samsung Galaxy Tab 10.1 banned in the United States. So where to now for Samsung? Adam takes a look at the future of free-to-air TV, drawing parallels in the world of what's just happened in print media. Also, have you ever caught the kids with their hand in the biscuit jar, and their face has that look of sprung bad written all over it? Well, that's just what happened to Telstra last week when Australia's largest telco admitted to tracking websites that their mobile customers had been visiting, and then passing those details on to an offshore company without the consent of its customers. We'll take a look at this on today's show, along with the newly announced Windows 8 upgrade path. There's the latest in gaming, and don't forget there's the usual Oddspot gadget app and website of the week. That's all to come on today's edition of Tech Talk Radio. First up, though, here's this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio news desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Telstra admits to tracking its customers' internet usage on NextG. Research in motion goes from bad to worse. Microsoft is on track to launch Xbox Music, and Google announces the Nexus 7 Android tablet. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Telstra has admitted to tracking, recording, and releasing the internet activity of customers on its NextG data network. The telco says data was being recorded, anonymized, and then provided to a company in the United States called NetSuite, and that this was being done to assist with the development of a new filter service. Telstra says the service being developed, called Smart Controls, will cost $2.95 a month and will be marketed to parents wanting to ensure the safety of their children online. A network engineer formerly employed by Internode, Mr. Mark Newton, made the discovery last week when he noticed web servers he was accessing on NextG were being hit about a quarter of a second later from an IP address in Chicago. Mr. Newton said in a complaint to Telstra, "It is abundantly clear that data regarding URLs I visited using my NextG service are being sent to an offshore third party." Telstra confirmed that this was the case, publicly apologised, and told customers via its corporate blog that data was no longer being recorded. Telstra said that at no point in the development of the product was personal information collected or stored. The Australian Green Senator for Western Australia, Senator Scott Ludlam, told ABC Radio last week he'd asked Telstra to provide more information about Project NetSweeper.
Any item that's out there on the web has to have its unique address or it can't be found. And I don't want to overstate or overplay this because at the moment it's actually quite ambiguous as to what's even occurring.
Senator Ludlam said that internet users needed to be aware that internet traffic and IP addresses were routinely recorded by web servers and network equipment.
Potentially, profiles can be built of people out of the places that they go and the things that they look at online or the people that they're in contact with. These things are possible. These are live debates.
Mr. Newton, who discovered the activity, said he was intending to complain to the Privacy Commissioner about Telstra sending his data overseas without his permission. In other embarrassing news for Telstra, both the Australian Communications and Media Authority and the Australian Privacy Commissioner announced last week that the telco had breached the Privacy Act when it left exposed online the personal details of some 734,000 customers last year. Telstra admitted in December that the names, addresses, and in some cases driver's licence numbers and dates of birth were publicly available because of a security flaw in the telco's customer service management tool. It's understood the ACMA will send Telstra Telstra a direction to comply, but the telco appears to have avoided any financial penalty in this instance. To other news this week, manufacturer of the BlackBerry smartphone Research in Motion posted worse-than-expected results for its latest quarter of trading. RIM's CEO, Mr. Thorsten Hines, reported the company's first quarterly operating loss in more than 7 years. He also announced that RIM will be cutting 5,000 jobs over the course of the fiscal year, ending next March, and will delay the launch of its new operating system, BlackBerry 10, until sometime in 2013. RIM had previously announced its intention to cut $1 billion in annual costs this year. The company posted a net loss of $518 million, or 99 cents a share, in the quarter which ended on the 2nd of June. Analysts say the BlackBerry market is being decimated by sales of Apple iPhones and Android handsets, and that the outlook for the Ontario-based company is bleak. Microsoft has announced plans to launch an Xbox Music service to compete with the likes of Spotify and iTunes. Xbox Music will let users stream or download music for a monthly or annual fee and provide online storage functions, much like Apple's iTunes. Since Microsoft made the announcement at the E3 video game conference in Los Angeles, The Age Digital Life has reported the company is now in talks with major record labels for the rights to run a music distribution service, and that Xbox Music will be launched later this year. Industry insiders also say the flailing Zune service will be closed and customers will be moved to Xbox Music. Microsoft retired the Zune Music Player last year. And in an unashamed broadside at Apple's iPad and Amazon's Kindle ebook reader, Google has announced the availability of the Nexus 7, coming to Australian stores in about 2 weeks. The new tablet, made by Asus, with a 7-inch screen running Android version 4.1, also known as Jelly Bean, will retail from $249. The Age Tech notes that the price is $50 more than US customers will pay, despite the Australian dollar being at or near parity with the US dollar. The Nexus 7 features a quad-core processor and up to 8 hours of battery life during active use. It has a 1.2-megapixel front-facing camera and 802.11 B, G, and N Wi-Fi compatibility. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Global LCD shipments have fallen for the first time ever.
Don't joke about these things. There's nothing funny about Gina Rinehart and what's happening in Australian media.
Yep, could go either way, absolutely. It's really, really difficult to pick.
Oh, Radio Shack TRS-80, 5.25-inch floppy disk.
Which means that those users have no upgrade future.
There's more to photography than a smartphone.
But this new generation of Google TV relies on a separate set-top box.
Can I go out tomorrow and buy one?
Not tomorrow, no.
It's of no use to me then.
I'm going to regret saying that if something does happen.
Oh, yeah,
I
probably will.
And then I think of the complete and utter unmitigated disaster of the Zune.
I didn't buy an iPad because it was made out of aluminium.
Way in stain. What even is?
What even is?
It certainly is a chance for that.
Yes.
Wow.
Not surprised at your place.
Entertaining, informative, and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Tech Talk Radio. Welcome to the show today, Dr. Ron.
Hello. How are you going, Andrew?
Hello, Saint John.
Why do you say that?
You've got your name on your wind cheater over there.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, sorry. Saint. Doctor's not good enough. You've moved up in the world.
That's right. That's right. Yes.
Graham down the other end of the panel. Hello, Graham.
Hello, Andrew.
We're running on luck tonight. Your voice has actually picked up a bit. We were debating whether or not you'd make it to a microphone this evening.
Yep, if I'm a bit quiet, you'll know it's because the frog in my throat has got to me a bit.
And the squeaky one's going to be exceptionally quiet tonight because the frog got her. She wasn't feeling too flash and had a better offer and a whole heap of other sins. So we're lenaless this evening. I'll pull that down for you. There you go, Dr. Ron. So there you go. It's the boy show tonight. Hopefully that ain't too bad. Or today, should I say. So with a bit of luck, we'll get through it. Plough through it.
I'm sure we'll get through it. We've got plenty to talk about and lots has been happening.
Hey, can I talk about the first thing? What did you do that with that spare second you had across the course of the weekend?
The leap second that was added.
Yeah. What did you do with it? Did you notice it? You probably didn't even know. You probably
personally,
blissfully...
I was blissfully ignorant, but there were some systems around the world, some computer systems that were severely affected by it.
There was.
I thought we'd gotten over this whole leap year and leap second thing causing problems?
Well, I think computers can handle an hour change, but the second change really throws them. Mathematically, they're not expecting 61 seconds in a minute. And, of course, when the 61st second comes along...
Well, it's sloppy programming is what it comes down to. There's no other excuse. It's someone who just hasn't taken into account all the possibilities. It's someone who hasn't completely done their job.
If X is greater than 59 or 60, then do this. Well, yeah, it all comes down to the programming, doesn't it, Graham?
Yep, it does, yep.
Nothing to do with equipment, hardware or the likes. Just something to keep us on your toes. Anyway, apparently the Earth is...
flat.
Yeah, that too. I was actually going to say slowing down.
Oh, yeah, it is. Yeah, it's slowing down.
It is. It's slowing down. And this is because the moon is moving further away from the planet Earth at the moment.
I was listening to Dr. Carl talking about this a few weeks ago. Really? He said that, yeah, in about 400,000 years, it's... yeah, it's...
There was a fascinating program I saw on BBC Two recently about why the Earth needs the moon. Now, the moon is moving away from us, I think, at around about a thumbnail every year. So it's not going to be too much of an issue, but it's certainly... And it's slowing down as well. Everything's just slowing down.
Yep, yep.
So every 4-odd years or whatever it is, they stick an extra second into life just to make things more complex. Now, I don't remember anything like this happening in 2008, 2005 or 1998. Do you? Or maybe we're just...
Yeah, vaguely I do.
Yeah, I remember past leaf seconds. I used to keep an eye on the advisory to see if they were coming up, but I gave up because there weren't any for a while.
Okay.
I can remember actually making an effort to keep an eye on them for the purpose of being able to mention it on Tech Talk Radio when they were coming up.
Uh-huh.
And I missed this one.
Oh, did you? Oh, well, it happened over the course of the weekend. It took Qantas down. It took Qantas unawares, along with a lot of other websites around the world. So, and of course, the good old Twitterverse went ballistic with it, with sites disappearing. But, yeah, anyway, nothing untoward here. In our part of the world, I don't think the traffic lights kept working and newspapers kept publishing for the time being?
Yeah, the reservation system was what brought Qantas undone.
Well, that's
right.
That
system's called Amadeus, and if you're a frequent traveller or a frequent flyer, you'll know that there are many, many airlines around Australia and around the world that use this system. It's the same system that produces that 6-character booking number or reference number when you book a flight. You might get a reference number which is like EKC, BKH or something like that. That's generated by the Amadeus system, and it controls the seat reservations and keeps track of how many bags and how much luggage you've got associated with your booking and all that sort of stuff. And for whatever reason, the Amadeus system didn't cope. So it wasn't just Qantas. There were a lot of airlines that were affected when the Amadeus reservation system turned up its toes. I can't for the life of me think why it would. It's probably just a very old system. It's been around for a long time.
Yeah, it's a bit like flex cabs with Telstra.
That's a Telstra billing system.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that didn't have any trouble.
Well, not that we know yet.
No, well, it's wait and see if we get bills.
Wait for our billing, yes.
Yeah.
There's there are people in the chat already sort of wondering whether they should buy a diary or something for 2013. I don't think it's slowing that fast, guys. You're right for at least another 12 months, I would have thought.
When did the Mayans say that the world's going to end? Was that this year?
Oh, last year, wasn't it?
Last year, was it?
Yeah, we've missed it.
Yeah, that didn't happen, did it?
No, not that I'm aware of. So yeah, that was a bit of an interesting one. The big time second glitchy thing that was supposed to throw us.
They weren't the only websites that went down during the past few days either. Are you across the issues that Amazon had with their cloud systems?
Yeah, I heard that. No, I'm not exactly across it, but what happened?
You might have seen on the news there's been some extreme weather over on the east coast of the United States. Around,
yeah, Virginia's copped it. Lashing.
And the Washington area and around there, there have been massive sort of clusters of thunderstorms doing lots and lots of damage and a massive heat wave.
They said this would happen.
In excess of 40 degree temperatures and people without power for extended periods of time, like days at a time. Amazon's one of their data centers is in that area.
Yep.
And they lost both sources of main. They had two different mains power sources from two different substations, and both of them went. A generator started up, and it had a faulty fan on it, so it then shut down again a bit later on. And a backup had a misconfigured circuit breaker, so when it took all the load, it tripped the circuit breaker, and anyone who was running their business solely out of that single data center and didn't have a geographic redundancy to another data center lost their servers for a while until Amazon sorted out their power issues.
I see.
Yikes.
So that, it was a really, yeah, really bad example of how you have to plan for so many things to go wrong at once, and how you really have to test these sorts of backup systems. Like, for example, that misconfigured circuit breaker should have been picked up in some sort of testing scenario, and the faulty fan on the generator likewise.
That exact same scenario struck the 7 network about 10 years ago, if I remember correctly.
Yes, that's right. Yes, they had...
They just moved from their old station to their new station, and they'd only been in there a matter of time. And
that's right. And they just moved all the distribution nationwide to come out of Dorcas Street. Is that that's correct?
That's it. And then they had a grey screen up on air for about 45 minutes, if I recall.
Yeah, yeah. It was really exciting and really unusual to see a whole network taken down by a fault like that. So,
well, the power went out, and then they had two faulty generators, and the third one exactly as you described just then. Did the same thing. So
I think some of the sites that were affected by that were, I'm trying to remember. Pinterest was one of them, which we mentioned on the show not long ago.
It's for weddings, isn't it, Doctor?
Something like that. I don't know. For teenagers or something.
Yeah, something like that.
For young people, not like us. We're not young people anymore.
I'll just have it up in a second.
The photo sharing site? What's that photo thing that Facebook bought? I can't think of their name. Mental blank. That's not them, but you know what I mean.
I don't know. Remember. There were other sites like Reddit and Gawker and LinkedIn and Foursquare. There were a lot of sites that had trouble for whatever reason, whether it was something like what Graeme's explaining or...
Yeah, Gawker. Yeah, that was one of them.
Gawker, yeah.
Stumble Upon.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yep.
Yeah, anyway...
Netflix, which is Netflix. And Instagram was another one.
That's the one I was trying to think of. Instagram, the one that Facebook just bought.
Yep. Yeah, but I mean, the outage happened on a Friday night in prime time when a lot of people in the US would have been using their Netflix streaming to.
What time did did we get it here locally in Australia? Know?
Yeah. It was midnight GMT.
Oh, so just before 10 a.m.
Yeah, something like
Eastern time, Australian.
Something like that.
And probably...
10 a.m. Sunday.
8 a.m. in the morning on the West Coast, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, there you go. In other news, which is worth a mention, congratulations to the Australian Broadcasting Commission, the ABC. Well, they're a corporation these days. Back then they were a commission. 80 years of broadcasting.
80 years since they started up broadcasting on, I think, about 12 radio stations. Back in 1932.
Yeah, yeah. It was. I was listening to a bit of it on air across the course of the weekend as they were replaying some of their highlights. And the things that I didn't know, the first broadcast was actually a cricket game. It was sport that was being broadcast.
Yeah.
And it was done via telex.
Yep.
So it wasn't like we had...
Yes, they called these the synthetic cricket broadcasts.
Correct.
Yes.
And they played a few examples of this. So if you get a chance to hear it, I'm sure you'll hear it from time to time if you're listening. But it was amazing. They'd actually, the commentators as such were in the studio. They weren't actually out at the game.
No, they were getting ball-by-ball descriptions of what happened, but arriving by telegram or telex or something like that, as you say.
And the sound effects came off records.
Yep. And
oh, are you serious?
No, I am serious.
The cricket sound effects.
Yeah, audience, they had them all off.
So they would have had some practical sound effects and some recorded sound effects, so they would have had recorded crowd sounds and that sort of stuff on discs that were being managed by highly professional sound effects guys in those days.
They dropped the needle on the vinyl.
Yes, on the acetate, possibly.
Well, yeah, whatever it was.
Might not have been even vinyl at that stage. There would have been some practice. Like, there would have been someone who would physically hit a stick to make the bat-on-ball sound and stuff like that.
Oh, Foley, as they call it today. I have this mental picture in my mind of a man sitting in a booth reading things and cueing people, pointing at people to hit the ball and to bring the crowd roar up and do all of that.
That's what Lena would have been doing if she was born 80 years ago.
Yes. She was born to do Foley, that woman, wasn't she?
Yeah.
So, well done, ABC, for 80 years. And some of the historical stuff has been fantastic that's been broadcast across the last little bit.
And a wonderful sort of government innovation that's lasted the test of time, and we're still... can be so proud in Australia of our ABC.
That we can.
And it's so progressive. It's at the forefront of all the technology
today. Yes,
internet technology, streaming, video on demand, it's great.
One of the first great websites of any kind that we had access to in Australia, particularly Australian websites, but I think they were leading the world, was the ABC News, the ABC website, which had fantastic news content and other content on it. Right back at the very beginning of the internet, go back on, what's that, Time Machine website, and have a look at what the ABC was doing. the Wayback Machine and have a look at what the ABC was doing at times when other companies barely had a web presence at all, or if they did, it was fairly useless.
Mm. All right. The other thing, too, with the ABC, they have a new app that came out just to celebrate 80 years. Nothing to do with 80 years, but it's just timing's everything. There is now a new updated iPhone app for the ABC.
Let me see if I understand this. The ABC had an app for running iView on the iPad.
Yep.
But it wasn't very good on the iPhone. It was designed for the bigger screen. So now they've brought out a version that's able
small
to do
one.
This sort of stuff on the smaller screen of the iPhone and the iPod Touch, presumably.
That's it. I had a bit of a play with it at work today on Brian's iPhone. I'd play with it on my wife, but unfortunately she's lost her iPhone. We haven't seen it for weeks now. So.
Oh, hang on. It's gone from being broken to being lost.
Yes, it's gone to lost now. Status has been updated on Facebook. Lost.
Relationship status. Lost.
Yeah, lost.
Okay.
Before everyone says, "Oh, yeah, use Find My Phone," it only works when there's a battery plugged into it. So it's
battery's died and it's lost.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens there. But having a look at the new app on the iPhone today, it's very nice. There are a couple of little bugs with it. Don't rotate it whilst you're trying to watch something. But other than that, it worked really well. A nice interface. You could find your way around quite easily. So
I suspect the development team at the ABC will fix those sorts of bugs. They usually the other thing I noted, someone commented on the release of this thing was asking why there isn't a Android app for iView. And I think the comment coming back from the ABC was that the next stage of the revolution, they were working on making it all HTML5 so that it'll be universal, so they won't have to have a specific app for the iPhone or for the Android phones or whatever, that they'll be able to run the thing on whatever platform.
Won't that be good? Uniformity across apps. Can't wait for that. That'll be amazing. Now, speaking of apps, in other news, we'll get to the Coro in a sec, Dr. Ron. Segues are going incredibly well. We've gone to iPhones. The app stores are doing amazing things at the moment. Like, the future is apps. The revolution is all going to happen at an app level. And what I mean by revolution is we're now starting to move away from traditional means of media. We're watching everything now on our small screen and large screen devices, but it's sort of being powered through apps. You watch, like we were just talking about, the iView on your device, or you go to your TV and you watch an app on your TV.
Which is a little bit disappointing because it doesn't need to be that way. And I kind of hope that at some point the pendulum is going to swing back the other way.
To the web base?
Yeah, because why design an app that works on one phone, say an iPhone, when you could design a mobile website that works on any device?
Yeah, that's a valid point.
And I think that people are going app crazy for very, very spurious reasons.
Well, funny you should mention app crazy. The iPhone has been with us now for just on 5 years. It was first launched globally on June the 29th in 2007. What were you doing then, Dr. Ron? Do you remember the day when it came out?
No.
What's that ruckus over there? That's about all I can remember.
2007, okay.
June the 29th, 2007, so just a few days ago. Now, in its small but yet, a bright light of a life
almost,
that it's had
almost
so far.
5 years to the day.
Almost. We now have, on the Apple App Store, according to recent press, for June 2012, 650,000 apps. That's a lot of apps.
Wow.
There's an app for everything, don't you think?
It's good. It's good.
Now, on the other side of the coin, because we're non-biased here, the Google Play Store.
Google Play Store. We can't call it the Android App Store anymore.
No, that's right.
No, because now we play with everything.
Is getting close to 600,000 apps,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, cool.
And the others, they're probably worth a mention, but not worth a mention, if you know what I mean. There's the Phone 7 store, which is not going to be working on Phone 8 and vice versa, as Graham pointed out.
Discovered last week. Yep.
And poor old Rim. Well, they seem to be going from bad to worse, as you mentioned in the news before, Dr.
Indeed.
As well. Now, the other interesting thing I'll mention a little bit about apps and app development is that there are a hell of a lot more developers developing for Apple than there are for the Android.
Yep. Well, we've spoken about this before as well. Yeah. It's just, it's probably a return on investment issue as much as anything else.
And also the fact that you get less headaches, I think, developing for one device, one piece of hardware, as opposed to developing for many platforms, many bits of hardware. So we're seeing at the moment there's around 43,185 iOS developers, and there is just on 10,199 registered Android developers. Now, the overlap is very small. This is those people that develop on both platforms. They're just down to 1,412.
Okay.
So we'll get a
just
bit of
1,412 developers registered for both platforms.
For both platforms.
In Australia?
No, globally.
Yeah, obviously, there's a lot, there's many, many more. There's probably 100 times that actually developing applications, just not registered.
Yeah, just potentially not registered.
Or so. Maybe, yeah, okay.
Anyway.
We'll have to think about that. That seems like an incredibly low figure.
Yeah, it does. But 43,000 odd developers for apps, I think, for the Apple side of things, I think might also be a little conservative too, based on the fact that a lot of people are doing it out there and all that sort of stuff. So there you go. There's a bit of an app update. So now, that leads on to the next question I have to ask, Dr. Ron. You're sitting here in the radio studio this evening.
Yes.
I can see two devices in front of you.
Yes.
One is the one that I would expect to see, which is the PC-flavored thing.
There are a number of devices here to talk about. Yes, yes.
Okay, so you've got your PC thingy there.
Yep.
And then jumping the one that I'm about to talk about, on the other side, you've got the Android device, which is your mobile phone, which I think you whispered that you'd done a bit of an upgrade on that today.
That has had an upgrade. We need to talk about that.
But the thing which is just really flummoxed me at the moment is that you have an iPad.
I do. I have a third generation iPad, all now, singing, all dancing.
There was a bit of a rant on your behalf last week.
There was. I had my ranty pants on.
There
and that was that I couldn't find an Android tablet that would do basic things in a timely and easy to do manner.
People had sent you suggestions via email. I did see the email fire up with a few people.
I had
people
a lot of suggestions.
Telling you how to do things. But at the end of the day, you've gone out and you've now started the collection.
I committed. Well, I had actually already started the collection. I do have an iPod Touch, which I've had for a long time. So that's in my collection, which I used to listen to podcasts while I'm driving around. But yes, no, I've done it. Put my money where my mouth was and went to the Apple Store. Pre-purchased an iPad third generation.
Pre-purchased, how did you do that?
I think I did it through iTunes, actually. Or no, I did it on their website. I think it went to the apple.com website. I think it's like /au to go to the Australian version.
Yes.
And said that I wanted to pre-order or pre-purchase an iPad. And what that means is they'll reserve one for you and they're aware that you're going to come in and they'll have it all ready to go. And the model that I got...
Is this the same as buying online?
It's different to buying online. If you buy online, you put your credit card details in and you put in a shipping address. This is to pre-purchase so I can go to the store and pick it up and it's ready to go when
I
get
there.
Do you
do this through the same site or do you go to...
It's all done through the Apple.com website.
Okay.
Yeah. So the model that I got was the lowest one of the Wi-Fi only version. So I think it's 16 gigabytes of storage, 16 gigabyte capacity model. And it's Wi-Fi only, so it doesn't have any mobile phone network radios in it. But that's all I need it for, because if I'm going to be using it on the internet, then I'm always in range of a Wi-Fi hotspot. And if not, I put my mobile phone into tethering mode.
You've got your Wi-Fi hotspot in your pocket, haven't you?
It's on the bench now. That's on your
Android phone.
On my Android phone, that's right. And it works brilliantly through the Android phone. The other thing that I didn't want to get the mobile phone version was, it's another account that I have to pay.
It's another $30 a month. That's another, yeah.
Sorry, if Phoenix in the chat has said, oh, the irony.
The irony.
Irony.
Irony. Phoenix. You're going to get kicked and banned for jokes like that. Come on. We haven't got Lena here to make those sorts of puns.
Ray Triple J started it.
Did he?
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Come and join us if you'd like. If you're listening to us live on a Monday night, chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
Absolutely.
If you're not, feel free to send emails like a lot of other people did during the course of the week.
Look, I was very impressed with the slick retail experience in the Apple Store. It was almost scary.
Oh, they're all about slick.
It was too slick.
It was
so slick.
It was so slick, I nearly...
They almost extract the money without you knowing, don't they?
Well, look, it was very impressive. Like, those of you who have been through the experience will know exactly what I'm talking about. And if you haven't, I'd almost suggest just go and buy something cheap just to experience what it is to buy something in an Apple store. It was quite amazing. So I pretty much walked in and they said, oh, hi, you must be Dr. Ron. You're here to get your...
And they had a box sitting there with the Dr. Ron name tag on it. And
almost that good. But what they had was the guy just started tapping stuff into his iPhone and started making small talk with me. And within about 60 seconds, another person had just walked up to us carrying my new iPad and said, here you go, Ron, here's your new iPad.
Oh, okay.
I've gone, oh, wow, okay. So I don't have to go to a counter.
Can I just pull you up there? Please. You're not known for your small talk. Why did he... Was there an uncomfortable feeling between the two of you?
There was a bit. Yeah. He said, so where do you work and what do you do? And I said, oh, nothing. What? Why? Stop trying to talk to me.
But he didn't have chatting me up.
He didn't have to try and chat me up for long because the device was brought out. And then I was expecting that he's going to swipe my credit card. I'm going to have to go to a counter somewhere to swipe my credit card through a machine at a counter.
Right, yeah.
And he said, have you got your credit card there? I said, yeah, we're just standing in the doorway of the Apple store. And he just swipes it through the side of his iPhone. He's got a little device on his iPhone to swipe my credit card. Sign my name with the end of my fingertip on the screen of his iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, there you go. It's all paid for and done. And I've already emailed you a copy of the tax invoice. Do you want a hard copy of the tax invoice as well? I said, yeah, that'd be nice. And without a word of a lie, he doesn't even move one foot. He just reaches over, pulls out, open a drawer, just reaches in without looking, pulls out a hard copy of a tax invoice. It's just obviously printed off a printer in that drawer. Shuts the drawer, hands it to me, says, there you go. Anything else we can do for you today, Ryan? I said, no, I'm suitably impressed. I think you've done just about enough, actually.
So you've walked out of the door with a brand newy.
Brand newy, yeah.
Did you get your Apple Care with it?
Apple Care? No, I didn't. He tried to upsell me on the Apple Care.
How much was he going to flog
that? But no, thanks. Oh, don't quote me, but it was in the ballpark of $100 or a couple of $100 or something. And I said, no, that's fine. That's okay.
Right. And what would that have got you?
That's for extra support, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. And I said, no, look, I'm pretty happy with the... I'll be able to set it up and put my Gmail settings in and all that sort of stuff, which I did. And I was also pleasantly surprised at how simply and easily the Google integration worked. It was very simple.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I was expecting there to be a lot of hurdles I'd have to jump over and stuff I'd have to do, but that wasn't the case at all. I said, just set up my Gmail account.
Yeah, you expect a big alarm light to go off and say, you want to use it with a Google account.
That's right.
You're supposed to use it with your Apple account.
Yeah, warning, and having big buttons and links to go to iTunes and then tiny, small,
yeah,
you know,
and then having to look up some
Google
obscure support document, how to configure Gmail on your iPad, you know, for people who want to go the wrong way. Yeah.
In all honesty, that's what I was expecting, but it was not like that. It was very, very simple. I just typed in my Gmail credentials and straight away, calendar was working. I had mail, I had all my contacts and everything available.
The Apple people are actually Androids, which is ironic.
Yeah. Gareth, is Gareth Smiley?
There's several Gareths. I don't know which Gareth is the real. Would the real Gareth please step forward?
I think they're taunting you from afar.
The
Dr.
real Gareth,
Ron,
please change his name in the chat room.
Yeah.
Yes. So the whole experience was very good. Went very well.
Out of 10, what would have you given it?
Yeah, for the retail purchasing side of it, you couldn't get better. I haven't experienced anything better than that. I'd say 10.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, you walk in, takes you all of 2 minutes or something, and you've got your new device, you've paid for it, and you're out of there.
While we're talking about Apple too, just briefly, MobileMe, do you know that?
MobileMe, yes, I have.
Yeah, that finished up on the end of last month. And if you're still an Apple person and using MobileMe, you should be in the iCloud by now. But Apple have kept the data there for a little bit longer yet to give those people an opportunity who haven't moved across. So I think that's going to be the end of the .me email addresses. Or maybe they keep them. Maybe they're rolling them on. I don't know. But MobileMe.
When I was setting up the iPad, I had several number of prompts trying to get me to put in my credentials for iCloud and to get me to keep everything in the iCloud.
Yeah, you should.
Really?
Yeah, you should.
I just said, no, not now, thanks. I'll think about that one.
Yeah, well, you think about it. That's okay. Good. It's well worth thinking about.
Okay.
Let me tell you, it has... you're probably the complete opposite to the people that live in my house.
Yes.
And iCloud is very invaluable for people, the people who live in my house. So maybe you may not get the return on investment from it. Let's just put it like that.
What does iCloud give me? What does it do? Explain to everybody.
Well, it lets you...
About iCloud.
Things you download, music and purchases you buy on the App Store, it keeps them as a... an off-site copy for you in a lot of respects. It also keeps your settings there.
So right,
You can do all sorts of things there. I must admit, I'm not a big iCloud user. I've set it up.
But does it keep all your data, all your documents and music and things in the cloud?
Only music you've purchased, from my understanding. So if you buy a track...
It stores your music, photos, apps, calendars and documents, it says here.
So do you need more. An active internet connection to access that information?
Yes, but the new Apple stuff, you just walk past something and it'll automatically sync for you. If you walk into your Wi-Fi area at home, it'll do it without you.
All right, so it syncs.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So be good for your PDFs.
Well, now that brings me to another suggestion, and also the correspondence too.
Oh, hang on.
Speaking of PDFs.
Yeah. Do you want me to do this first?
I think you should.
Okay, I'll push this button and I'll press this button.
Your say on Tech Talk Radio.
Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is how to communicate with the panel. The reason why I suggested that you press that button and jiggle that button was because we got some feedback from Jimbo during the week, which was very nice. He says, "Hey guys and gals, just completed the latest podcast on the way to Bogong Village in the Victorian Alps." Graham, isn't that where you
Be
went?
Damn cold up there. No, he went to Hotham.
Yeah. Hotham. That's right. "I was struck by Dr. Ron's hassle with tablets and PDF files."
Oh, follows on.
"Perhaps I can help with this. I assume it is technical information that he is in need of, quickly accessing and something easily carried as well." Jim, that's exactly what it is. You've got it in one. "Recently, I purchased an iPad third generation for my wife. There was an ulterior motive at play, of course. I really decided I needed her original iPad to assist in my role as a customer engineer. Today, my task was to install memory into a critical file server at Dell. As I said, up in the wilderness, the iPad was the first thing I retrieved when I arrived at the site. Goodreader, an iPad app, is now the repository of all my technical information." Jim, before I read your email, I had actually had this recommended to me by a dozen people on the feedback address.
What's it called?
Goodreader.
Goodreader, okay.
Yeah, yeah, really nice PDF reader, and it manages your PDFs. And you don't need to be connected to a computer or connected to iTunes to get stuff on and off. It actually comes with its own web browser. Its own web server, believe it or not.
Really?
So you can put it into like web server mode and say, okay, browse to this IP address and send PDFs to it if you want to do it that way, or pull PDFs off the iPad if you want to do it that way. So it's quite clever. "The Goodreader iPad app," says Jim, "is now the repository of all my technical information, PDFs for Apple and EMC products, web archives for Dell and Lenovo products. I easily located the failing DIMM slot using this wonderful product." So he was trying to fix some memory slots, some problems. "I can even expand the image to go close in and read the mask on the system board for location. Goodreader really makes it easy. The app sent me back, I think, around $5. Yeah, it's a few bucks in the app store, that's correct.
See, there's an app for everything.
There is an app for everything. It's complete with a file manager and connection manager for uploads and downloads. Find the file on one of the supplier sites, upload it to Goodreader. It unzips in seconds and your tech information is available. As always, I enjoy the work you all put into the podcast, not just the news and tech, but all your wonderful personalities." Thanks, Jim. Checks in the mail. "I thought for Graham as well, very interesting, Microsoft going into the manufacture of hardware."
Yes.
"If you count Oracle and their tie-up with Sun Microsystems, Google and their links to Motorola, Microsoft and Nokia, really the IT landscape is heading for quite a shake-up. I wonder where the OEMs will all fit in."
Good. Yes, interesting point.
What's an OEM? For those who don't know what an OEM is?
Other equipment manufacturer. So an organization that...
Third-party people.
Yeah,
really.
Licenses an operating system like Microsoft Windows, for example, and churns out hundreds of thousands.
So HP... And IBM, they'd be OEMs?
HP would be an OEM, a Microsoft OEM, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I've often heard as original equipment manufacturer, so OEM,
yep.
Yeah. So they make the hardware.
They're tangible things and other people's intangible stuff, Microsoft's. Yeah.
So Microsoft, for example, have special licensing for OEMs. So if you are a manufacturer of PCs, you can get OEM licensing for Microsoft Windows to build into your system to sell it on as a unit with the software included as through the OEM licensing.
Cool.
Cheers, Jim. Thanks very much, Jim. That's good. And yes, definitely Goodreader. It does everything I wanted and more. That's really, really good little app. Adam via the contact form says, "Hi." Hi, Adam. "Thought you might be interested in this one. Christina Keneally, former Premier of New South Wales, has just been appointed CEO of Basketball Australia."
She'd have to be the most attractive person in politics today, or ex-politics, wouldn't she? Lovely, lovely lady.
She is a lovely lady. On SEN, which is a rival radio station, she talks about how people want to watch sport and so on, and how the NBL is going to take this on board. Pity the ARL and the AFL aren't as forward-thinking. And Adam's got a link there to basketball.net.au. Which is where Ms. Keneally is... it's actually got a video clip there, an audio clip of her talking on SEN.
Yeah, she lost the last New South Wales state election which, and I don't think it was her fault, but then again, I'm not experienced in the ways of New South Wales politics, but I just think there's a few people out there, the previous Queensland Premier too, Anna Bligh.
Yes.
We need more girls like that in politics. They do well.
Regular contributor and friend of the panel, GJ MCN, via the contact form, says,
hey, GJ.
My wife and kids love the iPad, and with a shared library, it's great. But if you have invested heavily in the Android environment, then maybe consider an Asus Slider, 32 gigabytes. I saw it at Costco.
This is more of recommendations for you before you went out and turned to the dark side, young Luke.
Too late, GJ. Sorry. It felt quite snappy, he says, and has lots of features, ICS included.
Oh, Ice Cream Sandwich.
Ice Cream Sandwich, which is the code name of the latest Android operating system.
You put that up on your new phone, didn't you?
We'll talk about that too. And the great Costco service, promise if faulty. At $439, I can't afford it, but it looked nice. Maybe a bit of a strange design. Laptop Mag gave it 4.5 in November 2011. And CNET Australia gave it 8 out of 10. There's also a Motorola Zoom 3G. While you're at it, pick up an incredibly cheap wireless Microsoft keyboard and mouse, $24. I use one for my HTPC on the couch. Anyway, the iPad is good, but bulk up on storage. Cheers, GJ.
Thanks, GJ.
I'm just going to jump out of the car and jump back in again. ICS, Ice Cream Sandwich.
Yep.
And my HTC Desire.
How's it working?
It's working really well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I went from Gingerbread, which was a version 2 point something.
Yes, 2.3.
2.3. Oh. I'm trying to remember now.
Was it? Hang on. The one we upgraded everything to was 2.3.
2.3.
Yeah.
And so we skip Honeycomb because that was a tablet
version of Android. The version 3s are just for tablets, so it's Honeycomb, yep.
And then we've gone straight to version 4, Ice Cream Sandwich. And it's working really well. I'm impressed.
What's the new one that's come out?
Jelly Bean has been announced.
That's just it. 4.1.
Yeah. Bring on your jelly beans.
So there you go. So that's working. So I had an Android week and an Apple week. Worlds are colliding.
It is. It's going to look like a tip out the front of building whatever it is in Mountain View because they have these big sort of like larger than life, you know, chocolate eclairs and things like that out the front of the Android building.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Googleville in Mountain View.
They have the giant things, which are the code names for the operating systems. Eric via the contact form says, hi, guys.
Hi, Eric.
Keep up the good work. TTR would have to be one of the longest running quality podcasts around. Well, it's certainly one of the longest running, Eric, anyway. I don't know how you do it week to week. No, we don't
either. Neither do we.
I'm very keen to hear the outcome of the iPad ThinkPad comparison. Presently, we use a 7-inch Samsung Galaxy running Aussie Explorer as our GPS in our travels. We live and work in the Tanami Desert and travel a lot, particularly in remote Western Australia. I'm finding that I often need my reading glasses to see finer details on the maps now, so I'm looking to move to the bigger screen as a result. I like Android, and had shortlisted the Lenovo ThinkPad. So do tell, please. Thanks, Eric. Graham, you've got a Lenovo ThinkPad.
Yeah.
Have you used any GPS or mapping apps or navigation apps or Aussie Explorer?
Not really. I've used the Google Maps stuff that's built into the Android phone that I use. But not on the ThinkPad tablet.
Right.
But I can't see why they'd be any different or better or worse. It would just be a bigger map. I just don't find the size of the tablet convenient to use while driving.
Mm. The application is what the application is that you're running on it.
That's right.
So I guess if you loaded an application like Aussie Explorer, for example, then...
And I've certainly found that I haven't used Aussie Explorer. I've used the Google Maps stuff that's just come with my phone.
Yep.
And on the times where I haven't got my TomTom working for whatever reason, I found it to be more than adequate.
There you go. That's good.
I was using Dr. Ron's GPS the other night in the car behind him.
Oh yeah.
It's so big. I could see the map on the when I was in the car behind him. It's like Dr. Ron, turn right.
Were you following me?
I was.
Oh, this is a bit unsettling. I've got a Garmin Nuvi, and it was the one with the biggest screen I could find when I purchased it.
And now you can see it's three cars behind.
It's great. I love it. And now I actually take it for granted, and I look at other little GPS receivers like Garmins and TomToms and things.
I thought you were watching television the first time. I said, what are you watching? Oh, no, hang on. That's his nav man. Or his navigation device.
It was. It's a Garmin 14... Oh, I was going to say a 1490T or 1480T.
And don't tell me the 14 means it's a 14-inch screen.
It is.
Really?
Widescreen.
Oh, good.
No, not quite.
No.
How big's the screen?
Oh, it's like that size. I don't know, holding up my hands. I'm not sure, to be honest.
Don't ask a fisherman that.
Not as big as an iPad.
No. It's not quite as big as the iPad's close.
It's not far off.
It's close.
Sorry, Coro? We'll get through Coro. Yeah, we're nearly halfway through the show.
Nearly halfway through the Coro. Jeff via the contact form says, hello all.
Hello.
Quick query for Lena.
She's not here.
Okay. Newbie via the contact form. No, we'll go back to Jeff's. You mentioned iOS 6 beta the other week, and I thought it might be fun to get it, only to find that normal people can't, only developers. What's
only
the
abnormal
go?
Normal people.
Also, after looking at the fine print at the Apple Store, I see that only iPad 3 and iPhone 4 gets all the goodies. That sucks.
I know. That's by plan.
Love the show. Cheers, Jeff. Thanks, Jeff.
If you're running an old one, they want you to upgrade, don't they?
That's right.
And yes, it is a developer
preview.
That's
the price that you have yet to pay for your iPad, is that you are going to be locked into what Apple want you to do.
So when this gets to a certain age, upgrades will stop,
yes,
and I will not be able to take it upon myself.
Which isn't to say that that doesn't happen for other devices as well, but you'll find that it's particularly what's the word I'm looking for? Apple have a particular business plan which they follow relentlessly.
Mm-hmm. You think I will find that frustrating, given that...
I don't know. I'll be interested to see. Some people don't find it frustrating at all. Some people enjoy the fact that your hand is being held all the way through.
Mm.
I'd be tipping you'd be onto your next tablet before you can't do anything with that tablet.
Mm.
I'm still using the first generation iPad. And it still works on everything that I want it to work on. And even the very first, the iPhone 3GS that I've got, it prompted me to do an upgrade to 5.1 the other day. So it's working on current software.
Okay.
It just doesn't have, as the writer just said then, you just miss out on a few features.
Yeah, yeah.
Jeff, the operating system on the new iPad that's all of about 3 days old is iOS 5.1.1. So that's what that was shipped with. It tells me in the software update screen. So, there it is. Newbie via the contact form.
He's in the chat too.
Hey, noobs. Hey, Tech Talk Radio Tech Talkers. Thanks for breaking down and explaining the basics of digital SLR cameras last week. Glad that I turned to you guys first. Otherwise, I probably would feel absolutely bogged down by the whole bunch of info on the webs. He says, I'm in the Canon camp too. Here's a Canon 450D.
Nice.
As we said, there's a Canon camp and a Nikon camp.
Yes.
He says, I'm not sure if that's an all right one, but so far it's been fun to use. I reckon that would be a great one, Noob. The two lenses given to me were, and he's got a lot of information here, technical information. He has EFS 18 to 55mm and EFS 55 to 250mm. He says, I'm going to look into buying the Nifty 50, which is the one that Lena was telling us about.
Yep.
I followed Lena's advice and I bought the Four Dummies book. It arrived a few days ago. I'm slowly getting through it. So far it's been great. It's guiding me through the ins and outs and giving me simple tips that I wouldn't have even considered, such as facing the camera downwards when changing the lens. That's a good tip.
Keeps the dust and muck out of it, and also stops incredibly bright light hitting your CCD array.
Ah, yes. I've jumped to the later chapters, which introduce you and walk you through important technical stuff like ISO and exposure. I'm gradually getting my head around these concepts, and I'm doing my best to resist the temptation of auto.
Yes, yes. Very good.
Graham approves, Noob. By the way, I'm a Perthling, so I'll continue searching for some short photography courses here. Thanks, Newbie.
Well done. That's good. Good achievement.
That chapter you're reading that talks about, just get a piece of paper, draw a triangle, and at each point of the triangle, put ISO at one point, exposure at the other point, and exposure is shutter speed.
It is, you're right.
And f-stop or aperture at the third point, and that's what you need to know about exposure. It's those three things.
Ah. Resist the temptation of auto. I like that. That's good. And last but not least,
auto's good though in happy snap moment. But if you're outside a happy snap moment, you're doing portraiture stuff and trying to do nice photos, you're not in happy snap moment, are you?
That's right. You don't. If you want to live in happy snap mode, don't buy a DSLR. Go and buy a happy snap camera.
Good tip.
You'll get better. You'll get a better experience anyway. They're excellent. You can get excellent cameras that aren't DSLRs that'll do that job.
A little happy, snappy camera like that.
Like the one I have, yeah.
Yeah,
yep. Yeah, because I don't have these expensive cameras like you guys have.
They're normally a lot more transport friendly. They're not bulky. They don't have big lenses.
They're much smaller.
They can fit in your top pocket.
Smaller and lighter and yeah.
Yeah.
I've used a few of those. The best one, I think, is a Lumix model. They're quite popular, the Lumix ones.
They're the Panasonic ones.
That's right. Yeah, you're right, Graham. Yeah,
that's what I'm using right now. The other one I had before that was a Canon Ixus.
Yeah, yep.
Which are also extremely good cameras. So okay. Both of those will produce lovely, lovely pictures. The Panasonics, I think, use Leica lenses, Leica lens designs. So,
oh, yes.
And, of course, that's a very famous name in the world of lenses.
Whilst we're talking photography, Mad Max 3. Is it Mad Max 3? The new Mad Max that was going to be shot up in Broken Hill recently is back on the cards, but it's going to be shot on a couple of DSLRs.
Oh.
Mm.
Yep, a lot of digital SLR cameras being used to film video on now because of the high quality of the lenses and the sensor and the ability to produce, you know, 1080p.
Yeah, there's an Arri in the equation as well, but DSLRs, they're making more and more headway into today's modern motion picture making and television making and happy snaps.
Mm.
Last but not least, long-time friend of the panel, Mountain Wombat.
Hello, Mountain Wombat.
Via the contact form, says, Dear Tech Talkies, last week you mentioned the old Surface table. Beg your pardon. It is alive and working as a promotional device in Las Vegas. If you watch Hawaii 5.0, on the television, they have a promo deal with Microsoft and they use one in their office to dramatically do their computer stuff.
Wow.
They also all use Windows phones and their laptops all have the Windows logo on the back of the screen. I think the new Surface devices and Windows Phone 8 are an important step. It means you can develop an app that will require only minor changes to run on any Microsoft device from the PC to the phone. And let's face facts, dumping the Windows Phone 7 will only inconvenience about 270 people.
Harsh.
Mountain, come on, won't be that many. Mountain Wombat, that's nice. Good feedback there.
Samsung have also got a Surface type, a tabletop type Surface that is based on Microsoft's software as well. And if you go to the actual Microsoft Surface website, they point you to the Pixel Sense website, which will explain it all.
Yeah.
So pixelsense.com.
Pixelsense.com. We'll pop that one in the show notes.
You need to know, really, isn't it?
It is. If you'd like to communicate with the panel, can, and you know how, feedback@techtalkradio.com.au.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
During the week, the upgrade paths for Windows 8 were unveiled of Microsoft. Now, there's been a bit of a controversy around how you can get your hands or where you can come from to go to the new Windows 8. Now, basically, users of Windows 7 Starter, Home Basic, Home Premium, Professional and Ultimate versions can upgrade to the basic consumer version of Windows 8. Now, I'm not sure what the basic version is, but I suspect it'll be like a non-networking type home thing. I know I'll need to be stand corrected on that.
It'll probably network. It just probably won't. Typically, the difference between the home and the pro is the ability to join domains and behave in that in an enterprise network.
So, yes, that's where you'll be able to upgrade to. And the beefier pro version also targeted a business with their data applications left intact. So you can go up to the pro version
Windows 7 Professional does not equal Windows 8 Professional in terms of an upgrade path.
Well, it's unsure. Well, I haven't been able to quite work it out. But the release here says users of Windows 7 Starter, Home Basic, Home Premium, Professional and Ultimate versions can upgrade to the basic consumer version of Windows 8 or the beefier pro version targeted at business. So I suspect you can go both ways. Or just stay on Windows 7.
Stay on Windows 7.
Which I think a lot of people are going to do.
They will be for a long time.
A lot of people are going to do that.
Or just build a new Windows 8 machine and just slide a new Windows 8 machine in.
Well, you probably use your old, an old laptop or something for that and have a bit of a tinker with it.
I haven't upgraded a Windows machine for a long time in the sense that you're on Windows XP, for example, and upgrade to Windows 7. I don't know. Do you do that, Graham? I usually just build a new machine.
I avoid doing that. Mm. It's always leads to pain and unhappiness. No, I would recommend strongly against doing that.
I agree. Start with a new, clean, fresh build. Install the applications you need to cleanly and then bring your data over.
Yeah. I use Ghost to do a bit of a backup too from time to time, especially if you doing a lot of fresh installs of one operating system and you want all your apps to come back. It's very good like that. Anyway, Adobe is going to end the installation of Flash on Android as of August the 15th. Did you hear about this? We did, actually.
Adobe's going to end. Say that again slowly.
Well, last November, Adobe announced that it was ending its development of Flash Player for mobile platforms.
Right.
Don't you remember? Everyone went,
yay! Yeah, 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 back, that's
back
right.
At the end of last year.
Yep.
Well, as of August the 15th, there'll be no new installs. So they'll probably do upgrades and stuff like that. But maybe this is it. This is the end of Flash as we sort of finally know it in a mobile platform device.
Interesting. Won't be supported in Android, the Jelly Bean operating system either.
Oh, there you go. So, and it probably, I don't know where it stands with Windows 8. Have you seen any Flash stuff in Windows 8, Graham? Because you're
I don't.
No, but you haven't seen Windows 8 since the day you brought it in here and said, look, here's Windows 8.
I actually pulled it out because it was the nearest PC to look something up the other day. I'm starting to get a little bit used to it, but it's still a frustrating experience.
I can imagine. Anyway, we'll see what happens. It's going to come out very shortly, towards the end of the year.
Yep.
So, another thing which is worth talking about too is the Apple and Samsung issues that have been going down over the past little bit. Now, it's probably worth going back here. Apple and Samsung have been going head-to-head in over 19 countries
around the world. You mentioned this in the start of the show, start of the program.
Now, it started basically ages ago where Apple had said that the Samsung Galaxy Tab had infringed on Apple's intellectual property, its patents, its trademarks, and its interface and style. Now, last week, a judge in the United States upheld that opinion, pending, obviously, the appeal processes and things that go along there.
So Samsung was prevented from selling its the Galaxy Nexus,
Galaxy Nexus, but they went further.
Right.
What's the new one that they've got coming out? The Galaxy Tab and the Nexus. The Nexus is the new one.
Nexus is the new one, yep.
Yeah, so basically the ban was on the Galaxy Tab, and they said, well, while we're here, we'll go the Nexus as well. And
The Galaxy Tab one's been ongoing for a long time.
Yeah, but they didn't say that you couldn't buy it in the United States. Now they've basically said they can't sell it in the US.
Right, right.
And now the Nexus has gone the same way as well. And Apple has had to put up an assurity of, I think, around about just short of $100 million US dollars in case they appeal it. And that's the loss of income that they would then have to give Samsung if they lose that appeal.
Okay.
So it's serious days, serious times. But that's where Apple and Samsung have finally ended up coming to. But that was the 10.1 that was actually physically banned from sale in the US. And the company, yesterday posted a $2.6 million bond to close it was just sort of like part of the finishing up closing processes of the legal appeal and stuff like that.
A $2.6 million bond for Apple, that's just loose change, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It is.
Half an hour's worth of revenue or something. But nevertheless, they do have to put their money on the line.
Yeah, the posting of the bond is commonly used technique to protect a company that's subject to an injunction. The money's put up to cover any financial losses a company might incur while its product is not on the store shelves. So, and just in case they appeal it and it's overturned.
Mm.
So, I didn't mean to mislead anyone with the 98. I'm not sure where that came from. Maybe that was something else I was reading during the course of the week.
No, that's all right.
So, there you go. You seen a Galaxy Tab in any of your tablet hunting rounds, Dr. Ryan?
The Samsung Galaxy Tab? Yeah, I have. Yeah, I've played around with them.
Because you can see them in some of the telephone shops here in Australia, can't
entirely
you?
Underwhelming, in my opinion.
Why?
Just slow and steppy interface. The hardware isn't running the operating system properly.
Okay.
Now, whether or not that is because, as Andrew says, I've seen them, for example, in a tea store, and Telstra have got their own skin and stuff loaded up and installed on it, and that's causing it to behave that way. Entirely certain. But in either way, it's not a good advertisement for Samsung.
Now, what about the Google tablet that's being touted at the moment too?
Well, this is also Nexus 7 tablet. Yeah. We're going to talk about this. Is going to be a gadget actually, so we're going to have a look at this in a bit more detail at the other end of the show. But this is the Nexus 7. It's going to be available in Australian stores in about 2 weeks.
Because we've got two new devices. There's the Surface from Microsoft, and there's going to be this, the new Nexus 7 tablet.
Yeah.
Yep. From Google, which is being made out of Taiwan. Asus, I think, are making it.
That's right, yeah, Asus, yeah, that's it. So version 4.1 is the operating system, so that is the Jelly Bean operating system, and it's going to retail from about $249, which is pretty cheap.
Gee, that's all right.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. Very cost-effective compared to other things on the market. But you get what you pay for, don't you, Dr. Ron? You're a testament to that, aren't you?
That's right.
So how is your Kogan thing? I saw someone very snidely put a remark online about your taglines. Apparently the Kogan one got blocked or something.
No, the Kogan tablet's
good.
Reading
your fan mail as it comes in. It's very funny.
Using it to chalk up my monitor at the moment. It's quite good, actually. It's doing a good job.
Oh, it's finally found its home, has
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm pleased. Yeah. All right. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron, Graham Callaghan in this evening. Lena couldn't join us this evening. She had a couple of other things on and feeling crook at the same time. Poor thing. There's a lot of it going around at the moment. Graham, we're lucky to have you here this evening as well with your croaky coughs and stuff like that too. So.
Sorry about that.
I know. It's all part of the game. All part of the game. Now, Adam Turner is a regular on our program.
I know that guy.
One of Australia's leading independent tech journalists.
What do you mean one of? He'd have to be the leading. The leading. So this week, yes.
I'm not going to argue with that.
Aren't you? This week he did a very interesting piece, which I've since lost. Don't you hate it when that happens? Bear with me for just 2 seconds. But yeah, what we're going to talk about with Adams is the future of Australian television. Is it going to go the way of print media?
Wasn't aware that it had one.
No, neither was I.
Oh, okay.
Australian free-to-air television doesn't have a future.
Yes. Well, yeah, during the course of the week, there's been a lot of people speculating about what's going to happen and how it's going to happen and all those sorts of things, and Adam's no different.
Has to reinvent itself. The current model is just, it's not sustainable at all. People are just going to switch off, and people are getting their, you know, getting their television entertainment from other sources now. They're not looking at free-to-air for entertainment.
Well, how do you actually get your telly these days?
I use, I don't watch, I'm watching less and less television now. Just because it's not, this doesn't appeal to me. There's nothing on that I want to watch. But the small amount of TV that I do watch is probably catch-up TV on services that are offered by networks like SBS and ABC on their iView product.
Yeah, I must admit I'm the same. I'm the same. Anyway, here's Adam's view from the couch this week.
Adam Turner's view from the couch.
As the national broadband network spreads across the country, television networks will experience the same upheavals that newspapers are experiencing right now. For some people, I suspect the digital switchover could be the perfect excuse to simply ditch terrestrial television. Despite all the talk of a glorious digital future, Australian digital television has turned out to be pretty much more of the same. Filling those extra channels has simply meant screening more rubbish. Rubbish which the networks refuse to even start on time, and then they butcher it with intrusive ads and over-the-top promos. Most of the time, free-to-air television is simply unwatchable. Fans of high-def content have been particularly betrayed by the free-to-air broadcasters who decided that rather than screening sport in high-def, it makes more sense to run repeats of Gilligan's Island on the HD channels. It's a move that will certainly help Foxtel win over extra subscribers, although, to be honest, I don't really think Foxtel is worth the money, and that'll be serious trouble once people have the option to pay for a single game of AFL rather than paying for a full Foxtel subscription with all these channels that they don't even want. I think it's fair to say that many Australians are watching less live television, whether it be free-to-air or pay TV. This is partly due to the contempt that the networks have for viewers and partly because there are so many alternatives at hand. Older viewers might be sticking with traditional television for now, but they won't be around forever. Over time, the networks are going to struggle to win over viewers who've grown up with the internet. It's the same problem that newspapers are facing right now. Between optical discs, BitTorrent, and the growing range of legitimate online services, there's very little reason to watch live television these days. I know I'd happily give up live television ahead of any of the other services that are pumped into my home. For now, the only thing keeping me with traditional television is the superior picture quality compared to some online services, but that is changing. For starters, I'd say the free-to-air digital picture quality has deteriorated in the last few years. Even the Foxtel picture looks pretty disappointing on some channels, although high-def AFL looks pretty good. The bigger and better your television is, the more a poor picture stands out. These days, a decent BitTorrent or iTunes download often looks better than standard def digital TV. Movies also look far better on DVD or Blu-ray than they do on free-to-air or pay TV. Streamed movies from a rental service still don't look as good as DVD or Blu-ray, but they're getting there. Catch-up TV is also improving its picture quality. It tends to look better via smart TV than via a browser due to the way that it's streamed, but these smart TV offerings are really starting to rival the picture quality of standard def free-to-air. Unfortunately, you get a lot less content via smart TV than via a browser, but again, that will change with time. All this stuff is going to improve, but meanwhile, it seems that the traditional broadcasters are going backwards. Right now, TV broadcasters should be looking to newspapers for a glimpse of the devastation which lies ahead. Viewers will start to switch off if networks don't move with the times and treat people with a little respect.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Oh, how true. How true. But anyway, it's a biased opinion because I'm in the industry. What do you reckon, Dr. Ron?
I think it's an accurate opinion.
Well, I think so. I think so. There's someone in the chat saying if this is happening, then I'm glad I'm living in Japan. So it's good to see we've got some Japanese listeners listening in this evening. But yes, the state of television in Australia, technically speaking, free-to-air is, well, put it this way, the multi-channeling, which we have here, as opposed to maybe one or two channels, which we could have, and then distribute the bandwidth evenly.
Between the mismanagement of the regulatory environment that caused all kinds of strangeness to happen, so we didn't have multi-channeling for a long time when we could have, to the attitude of the networks to the high-definition channels, as Adam suggested, of not using them for the high-definition main content, so that the main popular shows on the network, although they're made in high definition, don't get shown in high definition in Australia. The high definition channels are used for other obscure things.
I can vouch for that. One of the TV programs we make for Channel 10 is made in beautiful high definition. Looks fantastic leaving the office.
And does it
Can't watch it off air.
No.
Very annoying. Very frustrating.
I can imagine. And it's probably not even shown on their high def channel. It's probably not even online.
No, it's on the main Channel 10 channel.
Just crunched down at 576 or something, is it? Or 720 or something?
Yeah.
It's horrible.
It is.
That being said, there are things that are good that that you can still use the television for. For example, the news. So, pondering around getting ready for Tech Talk, had the news on a little bit earlier this evening on Channel 2. That was nice. Last night, watching the cricket live from the UK on Gem.
Really? That's nice of them. Sport in HD.
Yes, and it looked nice too. It was good. It was watchable. It was really enjoyable on the nice big screen.
Wonder where the Olympics will be, because that's coming up in less than a month now.
The Olympics will be on Foxtel.
But they'll be on. Yes, you're right. And that then Foxtel.
If you're serious about following the Olympic sports, you're gonna want to have got the Foxtel package.
Or you could buy one of those new Google boxes that Adam was telling us about last week. I listened back to that, you know, last week.
Were you not here?
No, I was here, and I listened to it when it went to air, but then I listened back to it again, and I was trying to think how that would all fit, and I agree with Graham's comments. I think what's Google trying to do? They've sort of lost the plot a little bit. They've sort of missed the mark or something. Like, they're introducing another box into the digital lounge room. They should already have this incorporated or integrated in our televisions.
Yeah, well, it's a Sony thing, I think, as well. Sony have teed up in Australia to provide Google TV high-definition pictures. You need an internet connection.
That almost makes it worse in a way, because I've already got all that stuff integrated into my Bravia TV, and I've got it all integrated into my PlayStation 3, which is connected to my Bravia TV.
That's
so
right.
So I've got two of the Sony cross-media bars already, and now Google wants me to have a third one.
Yeah, have a third one, have another remote control. Yeah.
The cross-media bar that Graham speaks of is really the menu on the telly.
It's the user interface on the Sony TVs and the PlayStation 3. Yeah. A lot of people will be familiar with it from the PlayStation 3. But where you go across to choose a category and then up and down from that to choose the item, so...
The AFL in Australia is the football league, I guess, of choice of most Australians, and that ends up going to air in standard definition, except on Foxtel, which is the cable provider.
Which is a bit disappointing, because watching AFL in high definition is amazing.
And that quite often...
If you don't believe me, go to YouTube and look at some of the high definition clips on YouTube.
Well, yes, and YouTube's even better quality than the standard def stuff that we're watching on the TV. So.
Well, to ask a naive question, how do they find their way onto YouTube as high def clips? Like, where are they coming from?
I'm not sure exactly. They might be people
probably
that are ripping
the broadcaster.
Them. Yeah, I don't know. Do you reckon?
Could be. Broadcasters put a lot of stuff up now.
The other night that had an ESPN watermark all over them. So.
Oh, well, there you go. Maybe it's gone overseas.
Okay.
So
maybe it's overseas.
Going to other networks in HD, and those networks are preserving it in its in high definition. Okay.
Yeah, because everything ships around in HD. We have a minimum broadcast standard, which is predominantly HD. Though we can still ship SD programs to TV stations, and they'll still run them. But
obviously, it's not somebody locally who's taking it off free-to-air and putting it on YouTube if it's that good quality.
This is where the NBN's going to really... kick some bandwidth in the not-too-distant future, where we'll all be able to get really good high-quality stuff streamed to us. And you watch, the AFL will team up with Telstra. It's on the cards. And you'll be able to do a pay-per-game, pay-per-view, I reckon, in the not-too-distant. For
the AFL is teamed up with Telstra now.
Already, yes.
Well, they do all the web stuff.
What the AFL really need to do is to untangle that to some degree, because why would... I don't understand why the AFL wants to limit its market to only Telstra customers.
Probably because it's the incumbent and it's the biggest and the best. That's the only reason I could possibly see for doing something like that.
Because
Everyone else's network is considerably smaller. And there's a lot of capacity in getting a lot of stuff around.
What the AFL needs to do is to get serious about managing its media. And instead of tying up exclusive deals with carriers of all people rather than content providing organisations, they should be, you know, either tying up a deal with someone who's running a TV channel or run their own TV channel.
Ha-ha!
And then sell that on to all the carriers.
Yeah.
So that it doesn't matter whether you're on Telstra or Optus or who knows who.
I think you'll find that the partnership that they do, the commercial agreements, they'll want to pull it all in-house.
Yeah. Well, the problem, of course, is that Telstra is far too vertical. That needs to be torn apart. So that they're not both a content provider and a carrier.
It's where they've wanted to be, especially after
they've got... It is. It's where they want to be, but it's not where they ought to be for our benefit.
You look at Channel 9 coming up for sale shortly. February 2013.
Well, who do you reckon's going to buy that then?
Well, it's a fire sale. Whoever's got the deepest pockets. Maybe Gina Reinhart. Now, there's a thought.
No, I'm sure it's not. I'm sure it's a thought that
she tried to buy. They wouldn't let her on the seats. She wouldn't let her on the board at Fairfax because she wouldn't sign the... independence.
The editorial independence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Charter. So, I don't know, maybe she's looking for a media outlet of sorts, so. But, look, all sorts of things.
ADEB wants to know if Telstra is buying Channel 9. The AFL should buy Channel 9. That would make a lot more sense.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Almost got the same amount of money.
Yeah, see, Telstra will actually pull
Telstra. If Telstra did that, then they would come under a lot of scrutiny from the government. They would for being far too
well. They tried
far too vertical. They need to separate. They need to not be all the way from content, you know, content making to carrier. They've got to separate that out somehow and not be that vertical.
Yeah, the ACCC might have something to
Telstra. Well, I would hope they would.
Yeah,
I would hope they would. Yeah. Or if the ACCC don't, then the government should.
Mr. Samuel.
12 years ago, involved. Telstra tried to buy into PBL, and they didn't have the money at the time. But right. This time, Channel 9, $3.2 billion is what CVC owe their lenders. The CVC being the venture capitalists who came in and bought Channel 9 off the Packers. And, so I think they've got to repay their debts in February. And I tell you what, Channel 9's probably not worth $3.2 billion. Maybe some of their big block programs might be, the way that the houses are being sold. But other than that, anyway, watch this space. Telstra, Channel 7, Channel 9, pay-per-view, internet. Oh, what
Gina
a
Reinhardt.
World.
Yeah.
Gina Reinhardt.
Yep. Put them all in the mix and see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah, well, look, fun times ahead in media in this country, that's for sure.
We'll be watching.
Wonder where we'll be getting our media. Sitting here in the studio in 2 years' time, will it change that much in such a short space?
Yeah, it will. Yeah, definitely, it'll change that much in 1 year.
It's scary, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's very scary. What do you reckon?
It'll take a little bit longer than that because the NBN rollout's going to take longer than that.
And that's true.
Particularly if we have a change of government and the NBN gets nobbled, even though what Abbott said in the last few days or Mr. Turnbull has said in the last few days about the Conservative Party's not ripping up the NBN.
They yes, he did come out and say that, didn't he?
He did say that, but he also said that he would change it into his model, which and basically implied that it was going to not be fibre to the home anymore. It was going to be fibre to the node, and that would effectively nobble the NBN. It would make it pointless.
Mm. Well, we're talking about Telstra. They fingers in the cookie jar, as I sort of alluded to in the beginning of the program
yes. This
week. Now, I tried this when I read the article and saw the tweets coming through from Whirlpool about the fact that a user, who just happened to be a smart cookie, a bit of an engineer, decided to use his mobile broadband and he was testing a website, noticed that in the log file of the website he was testing, that as soon as he requested the URL from his mobile device connected to the internet via Telstra's NextG, an American IP address appeared, all of 250 milliseconds later, quarter of a second. Now, it only did it once. He went to another site and bang, there it was again.
So he is a clever cookie. What he then did, I think, on his own web servers was create just a dummy web page that wasn't indexed and was just just created just off the top of his head.
As a test, as a control.
As a control, that's yeah. right, a control experiment. And he went to that, and sure enough, quarter of a second later, bing, this IP address hit it from over yeah. in Chicago, I think it was.
Yeah. Now, Telstra was taken to task over it, and initially, as all good telcos do, they deny it. And then shortly after that said, oh, yeah, actually, yeah, that was the case. We were doing that. We were actually farming our requests over to a company in the US who were tasked with building a web filter for the organization. Dr.
Yeah, a new security product that they say is currently being developed. So it means that all of the web traffic that was happening on NextG for all of the NextG customers.
You and me? The person next to us?
Yep.
Everyone?
Was all being sent in real time to a third party, some private company over in Chicago called, bear with me here, NetSweeper.
That's it.
It's the name of the company. And all the traffic was being relayed to them. What Telstra said is that they were compiling a database of like a usage, like looking at usage patterns for what NextG customers actually used the web for.
Well, that could have certainly been extrapolated from the data that they collected. Surely.
Well, yeah. They were getting the raw data. They were getting all of the data, all of the web surfing data.
Now, the issue at task here is not so much the fact that they were handing the URLs across, but it was probably how much of your personal information went across as well. Maybe an IP address at the time, which could have identified you as visiting a particular site. Because as we know, IP addresses are key to identifying people on the internet. So anyway, Telstra has confirmed its tracking website visited by its mobile users in the lead up to the launch of the new web filtering solution.
Called Smart Controls, if you hear that term.
You were saying
that's
it was
the product name.
A very cheap, like it's a $2 or $3, it's throwaway type sort of money every month to
$3 a month.
Pop on the kiddie's mobile phone, is that right?
Yeah, well the product's going to be marketed at parents who are concerned about their children's safety online. But it hasn't been announced yet, and the only reason we know about this is because Telstra got sprung sending this data over to a third party.
Literally sprung.
Yep.
So you wonder what else they do in the background that no one tells us about.
They haven't learnt anything at all, have they, about security?
No. This particular person, I think, also tried other carriers, and nothing happened.
No, of course not.
It was only through the Telstra NextG network that it happened. So beware. Mm. You never know.
Well, the gentleman that discovered the activity said he was going to complain to the Privacy Commissioner about Telstra sending his data overseas without permission. Telstra, however, maintained that they weren't sending his data. The data was anonymized, to use the Telstra expression, so that his data wasn't actually...
It's a dreadful word.
It is a dreadful word. His personal information wasn't
anonymized.
Being sent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Telstra say, no, it's okay. It's our own. Anonymized data. It's just raw IP information that's being sent. So you've got nothing to worry about. Look at something else. Look over there, an eagle. Don't worry about
Squirrel.
What we're doing.
Squirrel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. There's a couple of, if you want to dig deeper, there are some log files out there on the internet about, if you're into that sort of stuff, you can see what was sent and what came back and all that sort of stuff. And it does appear to be anonymized, as they say, but, quarter of a second later, think of all the traffic. That was a hell of a lot of hits, I would have thought, going over to one particular part of the world.
Mm. Speaking of slaps on the wrist with wet tram tickets, Graeme, like you mentioned earlier.
Yes.
After,
plenty of those around.
After Telstra's debacle in December last year when it was revealed that names and addresses and driver's license numbers and dates of birth were publicly available. Of customers were publicly available on the web for 734,000 customers. The ACMA has now issued Telstra with a direction to comply in response to that security incident. So the ACMA...
They've done what? What is a
direction to comply. It says...
Follow the rules or else.
It says you're not in compliance with the relevant legislation and you need to fix the problem.
734,000 records were exposed.
The punishment for breaking the law...
Yes.
...is being told you're not allowed to break the law anymore.
Yes, correct.
And a wet tram ticket.
No, it's not even a wet tram ticket. It's useless, pointless.
They've not received any financial penalty as a result of that security breach.
That's a lot. 734,000 records exposed. Yeah. Telstra's entire Big Pond email system was taken offline, affecting millions of users. Mm. And they got a rap across the knuckles.
No, they didn't get a rap across the knuckles. They got nothing. They got a bit of paper telling them to comply with the laws.
Yeah, you're not complying with the law. Comply with the law. That's what happened. This news is, in and of itself, it's not news. It was from last year, but it was just this last week that the ACMA finished its investigation and sent Telstra the direction to comply.
Mm.
Which is appalling.
Yeah. Yes. In France, there is a thing, a network is probably more the word, being shut down. It's called Minitel. Are you guys familiar
with it? Not anymore.
With Minitel?
It was called Minitel.
It was called Minitel.
It has since been deceased, is shut down. Now, this was a very interesting... When I was reading up about this, I thought, what a great idea. They were well ahead of the times when the French rolled this out to 9 million houses around France.
The Minitel was actually a little terminal that people had. It plugged into the phone line and was just a little tiny computer monochrome screen and a keyboard that they could pull up information on.
Yeah. A bit like a teletype machine, really, wasn't it? And they could do things. They could even do little chats.
They could
book tickets online. They could probably find when the trains were running.
It was a lot like some of the closed networks we used to have before the internet became really interneted.
The closest thing I can think of here is probably teletext on the television.
No, it was a bit more than that because it was interactive. It had a good channel going back the other way.
So you could... Okay, you could feed information upstream.
Oh yes, absolutely.
You
could do searches. You could chat with people. You could, you know, buy and sell services, all that sort of stuff. The closest analog is things like AOL before it was sort of an internet service, or
back in the billboard.
Was it CompuServe and those sorts of services? Yeah, those sorts of.
You dialed up, interacted, and then disconnected.
Those sorts of walled garden networks that were sort of. Vaguely pre-internet or around about the time the internet was starting to take shape.
Not a bad technology, though. Developed by France Telecom in the 70s and freely distributed, the Minitel reached its height in the early 1990s with 26,000 services available and annual revenues of about €1 billion, which is about $1.2 billion. Now you could do things, as we discussed, you know, trains, chatting and all that sort of stuff, but... Apparently now there was only about 400,000 terminals still in use. Obviously, the internet has just taken over. When you think it was in 9 million homes, it's substantially fallen back. So 85%, obviously, the revenue going back to service providers. French Telecom had decided that it couldn't afford to maintain the network anymore, which upset a few people, particularly those of rural descent.
So it's one of those technologies that sort of showed us the way and showed us what worked and what didn't in an online world.
Yeah.
And was in some ways ahead of its time, but it's lasted the distance till now is a real testament to how useful it was.
The little beige boxes are being turned into car bumper bars.
What? Really?
By a recycler. Yeah, a recycling site in southwest France is turning the terminals into car bumpers, and others will no doubt find their way into museums, artworks, and attics.
As they do.
as they're destined to do.
Absolutely. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
If you're missing Lena tonight, you're not the only ones. We are too. There's a spare seat in the studio if someone wants to pop in. Only got a few minutes left.
Your time starts now, and you need to bring a game segment with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, obviously, Leans will keep us up to date with games going on next week.
Nothing happened in games this week, obviously. Otherwise, Lena would be here to tell us about
it. That would be it. She did do her thing at Acme during the course of the week.
Oh, she did too. That's
Maybe
right.
Maybe she's caught something up at Acme, and that's where it all started from.
Yeah. The Australian Centre for the Moving Image had a big exhibition and I don't know what they call it.
Game Masters.
Yeah. It was an event. Can we call it an event?
And we can call it an event because it's something you sell tickets to. I'm happy with
That's not the definition of event. but yes, and Lena was one of the hosts of one of the panels on that. So I'm very keen to hear how that went, actually.
I'm looking forward to a report from her next week. It'll be good.
Yeah, that'll be something... very exciting in next week's show.
I think she met people that she always wanted to rub shoulders with, so it'll be good. I think it'll be very interesting. All right, in other news that happened during the course of last week, the British LulzSec members, two of them, pleaded guilty to hacking. Now, these, remember LulzSec? We've spoken about them on numerous occasions across the course of the program in the last few years. Anyway, two of the group, Ryan Cleary, who was... of the ripe old age of 20. Now, his friend, Jake Davis, who's 19, but both pleaded guilty to charges that they conspired with others to hack websites. Now, these websites include the CIA, Britain's Serious Organised Crime Agency and National Health Services, the Arizona State Police, Nintendo. They had a go at Sony. They had a go at Rupert Murdoch's British newspapers.
Yeah, News International, didn't they?
20th Century Fox. The list goes on. Now, they did these DDoS attacks, which is the distributed denial of service. Which is a bit like making the phone busy when you can't get through. You get the engage signal, and that's what they did to these websites through these zombie
they
sort of things.
Bombarded them with so much traffic that no one could connect.
Yeah.
Which is not hacking. That's just DDoSing.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. But the group, I think, has been notorious for hacking. Weren't they responsible for the Sony breach? Was that not a hack, where they got the passwords and stuff like that?
Well, presumably.
Yeah.
It wasn't them, though. It was someone else, wasn't it?
Oh, was it? I'm not sure. Confusing it now. See, we get so many of these hackers / DDoS types, but Lulzsec, I think, have been around for...
Well, they came and went fairly quickly, as I remember it. They were around and very vocal for a few months and then shut themselves down.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. They came up and they identified themselves and they got traced because they didn't come in on a VPN.
But these groups all sort of are interrelated and tend to, they're not formal organisations. They're just loose sort of associations of people.
Anyway, these boys embarked upon a cyber espionage type sort of thing. I wonder what the penalty is for that in the UK.
I don't know. Does your article not tell you?
No. They've just pled guilty.
So we'll find out, I guess.
Dr. Ron knows about these sort of processes, but I think they've just said, no, we did it, sorry. And I think they come back for being told, okay. They should come here, ACMA will give them a warning. Don't do it again.
Yes,
exactly. If they've pled guilty, then the matter will be adjourned for sentencing, so I'm sure that will be reported in the mainstream press when the sentencing takes place. We'll find out. So it could range from anything to them, getting an ACMA direction to not do it again, or...
Well, that won't happen because they're outside of ACMA's...
I'm just being silly, but, they could get a slap on the wrist, or they could face imprisonment.
20 young kids... If it happened in this country, they'd get off with a good behaviour bond and they'd be cleaning graffiti off the fence for a week or so, and that'd be it, wouldn't it? Anyway, we won't go there. The National Broadband Network has confirmed a third satellite station, which is going to be in Tassie.
Yes.
Oh, the ground station? Yeah. It's going to be located in Tasmania? Okay,
yeah. Good. The satellite would be built at Castle Forbes Bay near southern Tasmanian town of Jeeveston.
Hang on, the satellite or the satellite station?
The satellite station.
Right.
Sorry, did I
omit
that?
You just said the satellite would be built.
I omitted the word station. Thank you for your correction.
Because there's no point having a satellite sitting on the ground in Tasmania or anywhere else.
Especially if you don't have a ground station to talk to.
Yeah. It's one of 10 ground stations that the NBN was planning to construct to support the satellite system.
I suppose you could put the satellite in Tasmania and put the ground station into geosynchronous orbit. That would kind of work.
It's getting silly now. It would, I guess. Yeah.
Not really,
no.
You need a long extension lead.
Yeah.
It would, a very long extension lead. And they have to be at a certain altitude, don't they? Like, I think it's about 45,000 kilometres from the planet because that way they can go fast enough that the gravity of Earth doesn't suck it in and it can go fast enough to stay stationary as it goes around. Is that right?
Well, kind of. You've mixed up two or three different concepts there, yes. No matter what orbit they're in, yes, their speed is matched to exactly oppose the gravitational pull, so they stay in the same orbit.
Yeah, they have to go fast enough so they don't fall down. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. But for geosynchronous orbit is a very particular height where the speed that they're going around the Earth is the same as the speed of rotation of the Earth, so they appear to stay above the same point on the ground.
And isn't that about 45,000 K?
Could be. I don't have that figure in my head. Someone will confirm or deny, it's something like that. Yes, it's somewhere... It's a lot higher than the sort of low Earth orbit where the space shuttle used to operate and the International Space Station and all the GPS satellites are all in low Earth orbit and they go around about every hour and a half. But these ones have to be a lot higher so that they go around the Earth once a day, which is the same as the Earth turning, so they appear to stay fixed. So your satellite dish can point consistently in the same. You don't have to keep moving your satellite dish to follow it.
I remember, I think, when Optus put up their... Was it OSSAT? Was that the satellite system? I remember having a chat to some engineers up at the East Burwood Earth Station. Try saying that. Putting my teeth back in. And I think geostationary satellites give you a figure eight sort of... But it's so far away that small dishes don't have that problem.
Yes.
Because of the way that it works. But anyway, let's move on, shall we, before we dig holes that we probably... don't want to dig for ourselves.
Mod in our chat room says the geostationary satellites get slotted into an allocated space.
Yep.
They actually describe a figure eight pattern.
Oh, there you go.
With thrusters to keep them in their space.
Yes.
I knew there was a figure eight there somewhere.
Mod knows about these things.
He does, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Anyway, there's some other places which could also end up being home to an Earth station for NBN too. These include Broken Hill, Ceduna, Casterton, Geraldton, Kalgoorlie, Carnarvon, Waroona, Roma, and Tamworth.
All over the place.
All over the, yeah. Well, they need 10, I think, don't they? To maintain the service? Oh, we'll see.
I don't know why, but yeah, though in...
A couple of redundant ones, maybe?
Maybe. Put one in Wayala to provide a bit of employment down there.
Yeah, well, that'd be good. Speaking of employment, thanks for the segue, Graham. RIM, you wouldn't want to be working for them at the moment, would you?
No.
RIM, the maker of the device that used to be very popular.
The BlackBerry.
In the United States. Not so much here, but the BlackBerry was all over the place when I was there a couple of years back.
Oh, yeah.
They're shedding another 5,000 jobs, about 30% of its workforce, purely because they can't sell any devices. These Android and these Apple things have just taken over.
Yeah.
How'd you be if you were Nokia at the moment, too? Nokia's an interesting camp. Are we going to see Phone 8 stuff from them? We were going to see Phone 7, but that...
Well, we've seen a little bit, but,
yeah,
not,
but
a, not,
not
a great,
lot.
No. I'd be updating my resume if I was at Nokia as well.
Start looking around, you think. Writing's on the wall. They've delayed the rollout of BlackBerry 10 as well, which is a new operating system. It was supposed to be round about now, I think, or a bit later this year, but that's been delayed until sometime next year.
Yeah, well, apparently RIM is in a handset death spiral, according to some analysts out there.
Yes, they are the Nokia of smartphones.
Well, let's all think about that for a moment.
No, because Nokia are the Nokia of smartphones.
Yeah.
Perhaps Nokia are the RIM of smartphones and RIM are the Nokia of smartphones. It's very silly.
It is very silly. A net loss of $518 million they just posted for this last quarter.
You can't do that to your bottom line for too much longer.
No.
In deep pockets.
They were going to focus on the business side of things, weren't they? I wonder whatever happened to that. Weren't they going to look at more enterprise type sort of packages?
They've got a lot of it, that sort of enterprise stuff. I don't know if you do any work with it, Graham, like the BlackBerry servers.
I've done a little bit, but not a great deal. It's an annoying product. Seriously.
It is. It's a nightmare. People at
At a technical level, it really, really is.
People that work on it say technically it's a nightmare. Yep.
I remember I had a colleague probably 2 or 3 years ago, and we had to change his email account on one of these BlackBerry things, and you had to. Oh, it was nigh impossible.
Because it talks back to the BlackBerry servers. It doesn't sort of do things for itself. It's.
And didn't they have a problem last year with blackouts or something like that? Something happened.
Yeah, anyway. If the network goes down, you can't access your mail.
They had a big outage at one point. I think affected part of their network.
Thanks for these cues tonight, Graham. This is really good. Vodafone had a massive outage during the course of the week too.
You guys have been practicing.
Yeah. A near nationwide 3G outage, according to Vodafone Australia. The telco is trying to rapidly keep up with the Joneses, being Telstra and Optus. During the course of renovations and something like that, apparently a router went down, which is the traditional excuse for having lots of network services, and took out a lot of Vodafone services for some time, about 2 hours. So if you didn't have broadband... probably not many people notice because I can't really tell you how many people I know who use Vodafone these days, but there's not that many.
No.
So
you guys used to use 3, which is now Vodafone.
Yeah, but 3 had their own network, I think, for some time before they were assimilated into the Borg.
They merged them, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, and in other news for Vodafone, 4G is being rolled out. Once again, this is probably what was a main cause of the outage that they had during the course of the week as they're rolling out the stuff. 42 megabit HSDPA technology. They're looking at turning that on from 2013 in some of the city areas. So Vodafone, very shortly, moving to LTE.
Yes.
For everyone else's.
4G LTE, which is now the term's just interchangeable.
Yeah.
Yeah, not in all parts of the world, which is interesting.
No, that's right.
Apple.
Well, just ask AT&T. I was on the AT&T website in the US the other day looking up something to try and understand how that market works in the United States. And they were promoting their 4G. They were saying that 4G on their network was HSDPA or HSPA Plus and DCHSPA.
A lot of acronyms there. Is that what we've got here at the moment?
Yeah, that's what Next G is. Yeah, the Telstra call a 3G network. The Next G network is HSPA Plus and DCHSPA, but on AT&T in America, that's got the same technologies, and they're calling that a 4G network.
Okay.
So
standards there, are there?
Well, no wonder Apple were a little bit confused with their marketing as well.
Yes, but they should be. Everyone should be aware of what the terminology is in the local market. After all, you're selling to locals, aren't you?
Hmm.
If you were selling to non-locals in a foreign market, it probably wouldn't matter.
I'm not saying they're not blameless, but it's just interesting that, you know, the device, if you connect the device in America to AT&T, then it's on a 4G network. You connect it to the same network on the same frequencies using the same technologies in Australia, but in Australia it's called a 3G network, not a 4G network.
All right.
Anyway, sorry, that was a bit of a sideline.
No, that's good. It's good to sideline, because I'm going to sideline again. Remember Mr. .com? That's what his real name is.
Oh, that guy in New Zealand.
The guy in New Zealand.
Yeah, yep.
Oh, okay, he changed his name.
He did. He changed his name by whatever method you do these days, and he became whatever his name is, .com. Kim.com.
Kim.com, that's right. Him. Yep.
Does he own the domain name as well?
Probably highly likely. I've never looked up. There you go. There's a challenge for you in the next 5 minutes.
Kim.com.
Anyway, the High Court of New Zealand has ruled that the police raids on Mr. Kim.com's mansion earlier this year was illegal.
Well.
Oh, apparently. In a major victory for Mr. .com, Justice Helen Winkleman found that the raid, which saw luxury cars, bank accounts seized, was based on faulty warrants and effectively unlawful. What's a faulty warrant? Did it have a corner missing or something?
No,
it
means it's a legal technicality or something that's been overlooked or something that's been done incorrectly. And when it's...
Ah, misspelled.
Or it had a dry solder joint or a broken cable in it or something like that.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's faulty. Just send it back under AppleCare and it gets fixed.
Does it come with a warranty? I don't think warrants do come with warranties.
Don't they? So if a warrant is executed and it's faulty, then it's all bets are off. Null and void.
It depends on other things. It depends on the laws the legal situation in the jurisdiction where it happens. So.
Yeah, well, apparently, Justice Winkleman said the use of the phrases like breach of copyright in the warrants did not comply with New Zealand law, as they provided no detail of the offence alleged to have been committed. Is that what makes a warrant faulty? Maybe it does.
No, again, what Graeme said depends on the jurisdiction, but yeah, obviously this is something which is very, very specific to New Zealand.
Yeah. Well, apparently the FBI get him now. They can do with what he wants. I don't know whether they extradite him or what, but I think they've got more of an interest than what the New Zealanders do in Kim.com. But he was just for those of you who aren't with it, he was the man behind Mega Upload.
Yeah. And yeah, this is all about the Mega Upload case, yeah.
And basically it's a place for people to put files. And I think he relied too much on the safe harbor principles, where all care, no responsibility of what people put up there, and they were putting things up there that they shouldn't have. And as a result, he was sort of a bit behind promoting copyright, either wittingly or unwittingly, I suppose. So anyway, there's an update on MrTim.com. In other news...
Before you go on to other news, his real name was Kim Schmitz.
Oh, that's why I changed it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Kim Schmitz. In other news... you remember the Thai flood we had probably 6 months ago in Thailand, which took out all the hard drives manufacturing Western Digital? I think Seagate copped a bit of it too, didn't they?
Okay.
Because I think Western Digital's headquarters is in Bangkok, which got everything flooded. You remember that? Well, I remember seeing the pictures.
Vaguely,
on the news.
Yeah. Yep.
Anyway, the drive shortages really pushed a lot of people to cloud usage because the price of drives has gone up and hasn't come down.
Yeah, not to mention... the rise of the what do people call them, the sort of power PCs, the slimline powerful PCs with SSD drives in them. So instead of having actual hard drives, they've got solid state drives instead.
Well, the new MacBook Pro comes
that
with
sort of thing. Yes.
SSD
yes.
drives in it, 250
gigabytes. Exactly my point. Yes. Yeah.
So anyway, if you've been pushed into the cloud, the cloud's actually comparatively cheap based on the plans that you buy. Because if you think about it, you're replacing a physical drive with something remotely. The obvious issue you've got is your cost of bandwidth of getting stuff into the cloud if you're uploading copious quantities of data. But a lot of these big broadband plans today, which the ISPs offer, would certainly cater for uploads. But unfortunately, because we're asynchronous, your upload speeds never reflect your download speeds.
I think you mean asymmetrical.
Sorry, yes, I do. I beg your pardon. And as a result, you get stuff up, which is around about a meg. It takes a while to upload to some of these cloud sources. But, Dr. Ron, you'll find out now with your new tablet if you're going to start tinkering with the cloud and doing all that synchronizing sort of stuff. But at small files, it really doesn't matter. Today's speeds in the city anyway are really good. Wouldn't want to be external, though. I'll bring on the NBN.
The Dropbox application on the iPad.
Oh, really? Yeah. How does that work cross-platform-wise? So you can pop your PDFs on one machine and it comes up on
It's fine, yeah.
And but, just open her up and away she goes?
That's exactly how it works.
That would just work, yeah.
Yeah, yep, yeah. It's really good. I could straight away could see all the folders that were there and start browsing all the files and, yeah, it works very well.
Oh, well, I'm sure you'll be happy with that. Have you given it a test, as in out in the field and all that sort of stuff
yes,
yet?
Yes, yes, yes. The day after I bought it, I...
Because you purpose bought it, didn't you?
Well, I did. It was, in my opinion, it's the right tool for a particular job I wanted it to do. I just wanted really fast access to a large library of PDF files, and it works well.
Have you got any other apps on there yet, or are you still learning and still tinkering? This is, sorry for those who are jumping around a bit at the moment. Dr. Ron bought an iPad a day or three ago, and are you playing with it now?
I am. I'm playing with it right now, yeah. No, I did have installed a few other apps. Flipboard I love, which
Great. That's
an aggregation application for your social media and news and RSS.
That's available for both platforms, Android and
the
Apple.
It's just very, very recently come out for Android. It's been available on the iPad and the iPhone for a long time.
I do like Flipboard. I use that quite a bit.
That's great. It's a lovely interface. It's really, really good. Goodreader, as we said, for the PDF reading. I've loaded the ABC iView application.
Yep.
I've loaded Gmail, which is just a nice Google Mail reader. It's the interface that I'm familiar with, so that works well. Fortunately, I loaded the Facebook application, which seems to be the only application I'm installing on it that crashes with monotonous regularity.
Well, we'll wait for the new OS. It'll all be built in then.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is not far off.
A couple of other little apps, yeah, Dropbox, Tweetcaster Pro for Twittering, and yeah,
that's a ripper.
What I'm up to. Yeah.
Oh, now, one of the things you said about your criticisms of, say, the Galaxy Tab was that it was slow and steppy.
Yep.
Have you experienced where you've done a slide or a gesture and it's just gone stop and started again and you've had that sinking feeling, oh, no.
No.
Got angry birds
on not it. Even once.
Not even once.
Not I can't believe that, really.
No, it's just nice and smooth, no matter what you do, where you do it.
Yeah.
Have you got Angry Birds on it? Someone in the chat wants to know.
Angry Birds, what's that? No.
You throw birds at pigs.
No, I do not throw birds at pigs.
Okay.
No. Graham, the only application that has done that, I tell a lie, is the Facebook application, which I just put it down to being a poorly written app. Yeah, and it's like it's doing it now. Like, it jumps around a bit like that, where it's not super smooth.
That's good for radio, Doctor.
Yeah, I can see that, yeah. Yeah.
So be it. Facebook's Facebook. It is what it is.
You are listening to Tech Talk Radio in the final moments of the show. We're going to take a break very shortly. We haven't had one all night, all day.
No, we've been rocketing along.
Yeah. OddSpot app gadget and website of the week is coming up. I just want to touch on something very briefly, and I hope I'm not stealing any thunder here. I'm not guessing because I haven't seen what you've got coming up later on in the show here, Doctor.
Oh.
But, you know, the census came out a while back. About 2 weeks ago.
Are we talking about a product or are we talking about a survey that you take of a lot of people?
A census is Australian government do it from time to time just check out what everyone's doing.
That census.
The Bureau of Statistics do it, actually.
That's the one.
Yep.
There's a checkbox on there, which is in relation to religion.
Oh, not this again. You're going to tell me that we need to tick the Jedi box or something? And
no, I'm telling you, it's past tense, actually, that 65,000 Australians tick the Jedi box.
Oh, dear.
We've had an increase of Jedi in Australia. I just thought I'd share that with you because...
Sad.
It is.
It's very sad. It's
Andrew, this is not the story we're looking for.
You're right, Graham. This is not the story we're looking
Move along.
Listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
The Big T announced its prices for the National Broadband Network.
Ah!
And that's a risk you have to be aware of and you have to be prepared to take.
So you've unnecessarily highlighted that awkward part of the conversation.
DLC stands for downloadable content.
Yeah, that's what it gives you if you've already got the toolbar.
I want a portal gun.
I want a portal gun.
Telstra need to take more safeguards so that one piece of equipment can't take down a network.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! Interesting!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
We mentioned it earlier in the program, the Nexus 7 Android tablet.
We did.
In an unashamed broadside at Apple's iPad and Amazon's Kindle ebook reader, Google has announced the availability of the Nexus 7 in Australian stores in about 2 weeks. The new tablet is made by Asus with a 7-inch screen.
Where
running
do you get it? Whose stores?
It's in stores. You buy it actually online. Yeah, it's running Android version 4.1, also known as Jelly Bean. It'll retail from about $249. The Age Tech notes that this price is $50 more than US customers will pay.
Standard.
Australia tax there, despite the Australian dollar being...
102 tonight.
102, yeah, at the moment. The Nexus 7 features a quad-core processor, up to 8 hours of battery life during active use. Has a 1.2 megapixel front-facing camera and 802.11 B, G and N Wi-Fi compatibility. It'll be available for purchase in Google's Play Store.
Oh, okay. So you just log on and buy it.
That's what you do, yeah. And it's delivered to your home.
Your Gmail account.
That's it. Available in 8 gigabyte and 16 gigabyte versions. And
okay. Yes. So it, and what's it? It's supposed to give Apple a run for its money and the other tablet manufacturers?
Certainly. The iPad and also the Kindle ebook reader.
Okay.
Yeah, but much, much cheaper. Certainly half the price of an iPad.
Yeah.
Oh, well, more than half.
And probably about the same price as a Kindle, then, if that's
yeah,
the case.
Yeah, and that's sort of ballpark.
If it's being made by the software manufacturer, maybe it'll be made to spec, so it won't actually be steppy and blocky like some of the underpowered ones are.
Maybe. I'd love to be proved wrong. But I mean, if that's what it's like, that would be good. That'd be a win for the Android community. That's our gadget, Andrew. The Fantastic. Nexus 7 Android tablet.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
www.accountkiller.com. Thank you, Freak, for this week's website suggestion. Do you care about your personal data? Do you want to un-Facebook your life? This site, accountkiller.com, Andrew has already, provides instructions on how to remove your account or public profile on the most popular websites, including Skype, Facebook, Windows Live, Hotmail, Live, Twitter, MSN, Messenger, Google, and many more. Also, do you want to create an account somewhere? You can check Account Killer's blacklist first, to see if it's even possible to remove your profile. There are actually sub-services and websites where they make it so incredibly difficult for you to remove your profile.
They've got them all there. Skype, iTunes, Groupon, Spotify. I've done a Graham. I've gone to it straight up.
It's clever, isn't it?
It's very good. Have you used it?
I haven't yet, no, but there are step-by-step instructions there to remove your accounts from a lot of the very common websites and services.
Mm.
So have a look.
I will.
Yeah, they have them ranked as ease of service, white, black, or grey.
There you go. Yeah, so you might go there and find... What's a black one, for example, Graham? It's
Skype.
Skype. Come. So very difficult to remove your details and personal information from Skype.
Facebook, surprisingly enough, is white.
There you really? Go. So you can un-Facebook your life quite easily, according to these guys. That's the website. Have a look if it's something that you feel like you need to do. www.accountkiller.com.
Tech Talk Radio, App of the Week.
This week's application, Track Checker for Android. Thank you, Rocco, for this week's suggestion. Hi, Tech Talk team, says Rocco. I have an App of the Week suggestion for anyone that does a lot of eBay or other things that involve tracking parcels. Track Checker, he says. It makes keeping an eye on just where your parcel is very easy. Not only does it track Australia Post parcels, but also parcels being delivered by 150 or more other companies. What a great idea.
It is good. So where you just put your con node in there and it sort of pulls them all together, doesn't it?
It tells you where it is, and if you've got a con node, like it has a barcode on the parcel and it's checked in at different depots and delivery centres and things, Track Checker will tell you where the item is at each stage of its journey as it's checked in. It's quite clever.
That's good. Have you used it?
I haven't, no, but it's for Android. Does it cost anything, Graham? You're looking at it at the moment in the Play Store.
Does it
say free?
It says free on my thing and 3,185 votes. Free Android.
Yep. It's just got an install button, so I assume that means it's free.
Nice. It does. Otherwise, it has money in there.
Yeah.
That's it. So I agree with Rocco. It'd be great if you had a lot of time spent on eBay where you're waiting for parcels to arrive, or even if you're sending parcels to other people and you want to track their progress.
I've never had... Do you get... It says track ID on the eBay when you buy stuff, but I never get it. Maybe I'm buying from the wrong locations.
Maybe. If the seller sends you a con note number or a shipping number.
Yeah.
Yeah, punch it into Track Checker.
Okay,
see what
I'll try it.
You. That's our application, Andrew, for Android Track Checker.
Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
Ma, the meatloaf! You can't handle the truth!
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
A British man who posted a comment on Twitter threatening to blow up an airport is now appealing his conviction in the High Court.
Hang on, just take me back here. A man tweeted that he was going to do a nasty thing in an airport and they nabbed him?
Yeah, but he was only joking.
Yeah, well, yeah, of course you're
one of those things
that
you don't make jokes about.
Paul Chambers was convicted and fined in 2010 after tweeting what he has always maintained was just a joke. The tweet read, Robin Hood Airport is closed. You've got a week and a bit to get your stuff together, otherwise I'm blowing the airport sky high. Mr. Chambers tweeted it to about 600 followers way back at the start of 2010 after an airport was closed to snowy weather. He was fined £1,000 and was convicted of sending an offensive or menacing message. But 2.5 years later, 9 judges and magistrates have now heard the case. And it's now the most senior judge in England and Wales. It's final
avenue. Is that the Privy Council?
Appeal. I do not know. High-profile supporters, including comedian Stephen Fry and comedy writer Graham Lynan, say the only thing Mr. Chambers is guilty of is not being funny. That's our odd spot, Andrew.
Wow. Interesting stuff, huh? You wouldn't go around doing that this
day. I agree with you and I agree with Graham. There are some things that you just don't tweet.
No, he should be convicted of criminal stupidity.
Gross stupidity in a public place or something?
Yeah.
Yep. Have his brain amputated as punishment.
A lot of it going around. You have been listening to...
probably a virus or something.
Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show. Dr. Ron, thank you for your attendance this evening, St. John.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
No worries. Graham, croaky voice and all.
Thank you, Andrew.
You've made it through.
Yes.
A whole hour or 2 hours, depending on which version of the show you're listening to. It's been good. We'll do it again next week. Hopefully, we'll have the squeaky one back.
She who sits in the squeaky chair.
That would be nice. Very keen to hear her report on Game Acme. Masters from Acme.
Yes. Good, wouldn't it? All right. So, don't forget, you know how to contact us. We like reading out your coro. Takes up half the show sometimes. So...
email newsletter. Make sure you subscribe. You can do that from our website.
Absolutely.
Follow us on Twitter.
Yes.
Sign into the forum. Register on the forum.
Do that. How's that going, by the way?
It's going well. Forum.techtalkradio.com.au.
Yeah, check it. All right. Until next week, the station you're listening to right now, or the podcast that you're listening to right now, we'll be back for more of this.
We'll be here.
Yeah, good.
We're here. Make no mistake. I'll be here with my iPad and my netbook.
Beautiful. I feel well enough now.
And my ice cream sandwich.
Okie dokie. Till next time. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellists Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by GC Support and Shaq West. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and around the world that broadcast the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. Contact us for the 2-hour version or access the 1-hour show on the Community Radio Network. Visit cbaa.org.au for further details. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03-8682-9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. Don't forget, you can follow the panellists on Twitter. Join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk Radio chat and solve your issues on the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.